The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
After you've been really dirty, you know, you go out to roll in the mud, caked with mud and grime and dirt, and it kind of feels pretty good to take a shower and get kind of a reset and be cleansed and clean and kind of fresh and ready to go back out into the world. In a sense, I think of meditation sometimes as being kind of like a reset button, where some of the things that are sticking to us kind of fall off, and then we're in a fresh place to go back into our world and address it and deal with it as is appropriate. And sometimes it's very helpful to have that reset or that cleansing or that purification process. It's very easy for our thoughts, our feelings, emotions, to be sticky to us. I've certainly had thoughts that are recurring and just keep staying, swirling around certain concerns I have. And they're still, you know, I'd rather they weren't there. But they're kind of sticky, and they seem to have a lot of momentum of their own. Or I've had emotions that are kind of swirling around inside, and they're kind of like just, they're there churning, and if I go about my daily life, sometimes they just, the thoughts, the ruminations kind of still there, and they're kind of sticky, and I keep reviewing what's going on, or thinking what's going on, and remembering what happened or something. Or the emotions are swirling around my heart or in my chest, and there's a way in which there's, you know, I don't think I'm doing it, but it feels like I'm just kind of like, you know, keep spinning the carousel, you know, and it just keeps going and going. But and some of these emotions that we have, things happen to us in our life that are often quite difficult. We have it's natural to think about them and be preoccupied with them. The difficulties, the challenges can be rest in our hearts and our emotional body, and it's natural for them to stay there or be there. And sometimes they have a lot of momentum, and so you can't just expect them to just sit down and just push the meditation button and that's it. 0 to 60 in 0 seconds or something. It's kind of like if you go for exercise, or you go climb a steep hill or something, and you are really out of breath. I bike home from here sometimes, and when I came home, I had to bike up the steep hill. And when I came home and put the bike away and climbed the little steps to our little house, walk into the kitchen, my wife's thought was, "Gil, what's wrong with you?" "I'm just out of breath." I just biked up the hill in the dark, and it took a while. It took a couple of minutes for me to kind of regain my breath. You know, you don't put the bike away and push the reset button, and you know, you're happy ever after. There's a momentum, you know, physiological momentum that's going, and so it takes a while for it to kind of dissipate and get my breath back and all that. So the same thing with the emotional impact of some things. Some things, the cognitive impact of thoughts and all that. But meditation practice, to sit down and meditate, can be a reset. It can be, it's a wonderful place, if we can, to sometimes let these things dissipate. And they sometimes can dissipate faster if we're courageous, if we're willing to sit in the middle of what's happening with us, our feelings, our thoughts, and not to push them away, but really allow ourselves to feel them. And sometimes we have to feel what is unpleasant, what we don't want to feel. And sometimes we want to meditate in order to feel better. And so maybe we're trying to kind of bypass them or something. And oddly enough, sometimes you feel better by facing them, by really being present. And the art of mindfulness meditation involves learning how to sit in the middle of what's happening with whatever sense of ease or calm that's available. It isn't like you have to manufacture calm and ease, but to kind of look and see, can you sit still, quiet, and just allow yourself to be in the middle of what's happening and feel it and sense it. And then if you can feel or sense or be present for what's happening without adding to it, so without picking up those thoughts, getting involved in them, the thoughts might still be going, but there's a difference between letting them kind of flow as if they're kind of like emptying out versus picking them up and getting involved with them and, you know, thinking them better or trying to figure out how to get them to go away or how to problem solve or try to think of a better answer to the problem you had earlier, the difficulty. But don't get involved. Same thing with the emotions. To really feel them, but don't try not to be bothered by them the best you can. Bothered means you don't pick them up, you don't attack them, you don't hold on to them, you don't cherish them, you don't validate them, you don't criticize them, you just let them be. And what happens is the momentum begins to dissipate because we're not feeding it, we're not pushing it along. So there's emotional momentum, there's mental momentum that we have, and meditation is a place to let the momentum roll out, let it kind of empty out. If we can get kind of a stop, I like to say, for myself, I like the expression getting out of the way of them, but not, no longer spinning them. So then things begin to settle, and settle slowly, and then there's a kind of falling away or shedding all the stickiness of it all, and we can sometimes start feeling cleansed, start feeling centered or settled here, without the compulsion sticking to us, the compulsivity, it's called compulsivity of our thoughts and concerns and desires and fears and worries and angers and all that. And I think of it as a process of being turned inside out, because going from the outside in, because oftentimes when we're spinning in thoughts and spinning in our emotional lives, it has a lot to do with what's happening in our wider world, outside of us. What happened to us, what people said, what people did, what we have to do, what happened. And very often the mind is kind of, we're outside of ourselves. We're not really centered or grounded or connected in a deep way in ourselves. And so it is a kind of way of being disconnected or being out in the world out there. And the process of meditation is to come and be centered on the world in here. It's interesting that the Buddha, in his language, he more often than not, when he used the word world, in the Indian language, the word is loka, he specifically referred to the world, our personal world, our internal world. Here is where you find the world, in this very body here. So to kind of settle and come into this world, and it's not just like you're leaving the world behind, but you're coming to the genesis of your world, to the beginning of your world. And so to really be able to settle, to get to reset, to kind of be in the shower and get clean, then you kind of find your world here, you settle in this world here, and then you come out of the shower clean and you're ready for the world. You come out of your meditation and you really see how important it is that your world begins in your heart. Your world begins in how you react and respond and think and do. And the advantage of the reset button, or the purification process, is that it gives us sometimes it gives us a chance to see where our world begins. So if I sit quiet, if I go, you know, busy, active, you know, life, and kind of frazzled and upset about something, and I'm driving down the road and someone cuts in front of me, I might get angry. And I'm just in the anger. And I just kind of, that's the world. I'm kind of caught up in the world and I'm in the anger and the momentum and feeling. But if I really manage to reset myself and I'm here where I know that this is where the world begins, is here, I don't allow the world to begin out there. I allow my world to begin here. Then when that car cuts me off, I see that there's an upwelling of anger, that anger is born in me, and maybe I have a choice whether I get on the anger bandwagon. I say, oh, there it is. And I let it go right then and there. Because I see the genesis is here. When I'm busy going around and upset and, you know, spinning around and the world is sticky to me, the external world is sticky, I'm sticking to it, the person who cuts me off, they are the origin of the world. My world begins with them if I'm sticking to it, if I'm preoccupied with it and caught in it. But to sit quietly and still and kind of shed the external world for a little while, take the shower, meditation shower, maybe not all at once, but slowly we get this inkling. This, I think, it's a powerful idea that our world begins now. Our world begins in us, here and now. We don't have to let our world begin out there, what other people do. And I find it really a delightful thing to sit in quiet and meditate and have this reset and be able to step into the world, even to not to ignore the issues of my life, but to be able to address them in a fresh way, and to address them with some sense of freedom, and some sense of being a little bit, I don't know what the right word is, expression is, because I was going to say a little bit in charge of my life. But usually in our kind of spiritual world, we don't like the idea of being in charge. So I don't know. Maybe it needs to be resurrected. You know, a little bit in charge of your life, because it begins here. You're tracking yourself. You know what the responses are. You see how things arise from here. And you see we have a choice. And we stay, you know. We don't build up the stickiness. So I don't know if this little talk makes sense for you, the idea of taking a shower or being purified or being... For some people, it's not this nice, sweet, refreshing shower kind of thing. It's like stepping into, not the shower, but into the fire. And sometimes it really feels that way. We sit down to meditate and like everything's burning. It's like it's so hot and so difficult and so the emotions are so intense that sometimes it's we're burning off the stickiness rather than just taking the nice, sweet meditation shower. It's the meditation fire. There's all kinds of ways in which it works, in different days, different ways. But what they have in common, all these ways, is a willingness to sit in the middle of our life. Sit in the middle of the fire, sit in the middle of the water, sit in the middle of the love we feel, sit in the middle of the hate we feel, to really sit in the middle of it to see if the stickiness can fall away, the momentum can kind of dissipate, and then kind of be turned inside out and come out again you know, in a fresh way, in a centered way, in a balanced way, in a clear way where we're kind of present but not caught. And the image that's in Buddhism that's used for this is the lotus in muddy water. So a lotus flower, apparently sometimes they grow out of muddy water. They grow out in waters, but sometimes I guess the idea they grow out of muddy water. So the mud, the muddy water nourishes and feeds the lotus, but when the lotus flower blossoms out of the top of the water, the mud doesn't stick to the petal. And so the beautiful white petal shines kind of pure. And so to be like lotus in muddy water means to be rooted in the world, not to leave it behind, but don't have anything stick to you. And then you shine for the world. So I'll end this little talk with, then maybe we can take some questions if you have, want some, or some protests, or... some of you, if you drive up and down Highway 101 here in Redwood City, some years ago there was a curious thing that appeared on the edge of the freeway. There's a kind of a, I don't know, like a little office block building there on the side of the freeway, and there's a parking lot for the office building kind of thing. And the office, that parking lot kind of abuts the freeway. And one day there appeared this big Buddha. And the Buddha is something like, I don't know, it's like maybe, could it be 10 foot tall? Some of you have seen it? 10 foot tall, sitting, meditating. What? It's about 10 foot, you've seen it, right? Yeah, it's pretty big. And it's up on kind of a platform. It's kind of high up, so it looks down on the freeway. As if the Buddha has nothing better to do than to watch 101. So, you know, I've seen it periodically and curious about it and never gone to look at it. And then some friends of mine went over to take a look with this thing. And so you can go look at it too. You can drive over there. And it turns out, it is on kind of a platform. It's kind of, it turns out, I think it's a cinder block kind of little, I don't know if the platform is the right word, but kind of a box, I guess. Or it turns out it's kind of like a one-room thing, and it's one side, it's open. And so you can see what's in that little cinder block little thing. And it's trash cans. So under the Buddha is the trash. He's sitting on the trash. I think that's fantastic. So, you know, in India it was the lotus growing out of muddy water. In Redwood City it's the Buddha sitting above the trash. So I don't know what metaphor you like for yourself. What, maybe you have another one. But mud, trash, stickiness, caughtness, attachments, preoccupations, fears, conceit, all this stuff. That's the stuff of we sit with. Sit in, sit above, grow out of. But to sit and let this meditation be the reset. So now, if you have anything you want to say, or it'd be great to hear from you. Your turn. I've done my job.
I have a question. Ooh, that's really loud. I have a question, Gil. When you go to meditate and you kind of, your mind is like a cat, like when it gets really scared and grabs onto your face, like it's so tight, like you just go into meditation and all of the unease and all the thoughts are just so wrapped around you, so tight. That, do you have any, or what is your way maybe to unhook a little, like they're clawed, like they're just totally gripped on you? Is there a way to break through that? And somebody said try metta, like just try a metta practice. Yeah, but yeah. I didn't know if you had any
There's two things that I'm inclined to do in a situation like that. One is that I metaphorically go sit right in the middle of the grippingness. I just go right as close and more intimate as I can be with it. Almost like I imagine that my awareness, I put my awareness right smack in the middle of where it's strongest. And then I sit quietly and look around.
For me, when I do that, I mean, that is great. I'm going to try now with having heard you say that, because maybe it's a fear thing that happens. But I, what happens when I have tried that is, you know, the old, like the 1950s tin tops that used to press and make them spin faster? Do you know what I'm talking
about? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you'd press it and then like go, like it would spin, mm-hmm. and it would start slowing down, but you could keep pressing, pumping that top, and it would spin faster. My mind, when I start slowing, even if I start slowing down, I'll catch a thought. My mind will just give it some more pumps, and it'll mm-hmm. keep spin back up. And it's like...
Sounds painful.
It's so bad. I mean, it's very... It's good practice,
Have you ever taken it to the end?
That's my other... Because I'm like, I'm trying to envision this instead as meditation being... You know, on the grapevine going to L.A.?
I mean, how fast can it go? Can you just take...
I know, keep... Maybe I'll try.
Keep it going until... Play it out. Maybe you have to get to the end of the record.
Okay. I'm just going to explode in the corner one night. You'll be like, what the? Oh, my God. There's Morgan all over the wall.
Yeah. So I don't know your situation well enough to advise you, so you have to kind of be a little careful what I'm saying, that this is the way. But there is sometimes when it's appropriate to just let the mind play something out. Only by playing it out to the end can you really understand it or really let it, you know. And sometimes we have to reach rock bottom even. And, you know, that's the whole process. You have to kind of, there are times when nothing else works, but just kind of reach rock bottom and it's hopeless and you give up. And you've been told that you should give up, let go. And I've done that. I just give up. Nothing works until I just kind of, it just plays itself out until I crash and burn and then I finally surrender. So sometimes it's not pretty. So that's, you know, maybe that's discouraging to hear. But another thing you can do is find your breathing and take a couple of minutes to really kind of get into the rhythm of your breathing. And then after you've been with your breathing for a while, then either stay with the breath if it's working, if you've kind of hooked into the breathing. And sometimes really getting into the breath and avoiding all that constriction and not being concerned with it, kind of just letting it be like, imagine it's the head of the person next to you who's constricted and you're not going to, it's like none of your business. And just stay with the breathing. That kind of complete ignoring of it sometimes can let it begin dissipating, because as you said, sometimes when we stay focused on it, we're so self-conscious and self-involved or something in it that we do actually tighten up and spin it out. So sometimes it's really useful just to ignore it as much as you possibly can. And then, so maybe I don't want to take too much, but the hybrid of those two is to find your breathing, be with it for a little bit, and then rather than feeling the gripping, breathe through it like a massage. And sometimes that breathing through can help kind of loosen the grip. I wish you well with it. Sounds painful. Someone else? Any of you feel that you had a little bit of a shower coming here today, or a little bit of a reset? Yeah? Anybody want to talk a little bit about that and what that was like? Yeah, you have to, if you could please turn it on, it's a green button on the side, or the button on the side that turns green.
My teacher, I won't say their name at the time right now, but she has said she talks in terms of taking a three breath retreat.
You're wonderful,
and I really like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's really useful in daily life. You know, in the middle of whatever's going on, just three breaths sometimes can do sometimes a mini reset. I sometimes do one breath. When I do one breath, what I do is I offer, if I can, I take a deep breath, and then as I breathe in and breathe out, I try to relax my belly. And that's sometimes a very interesting way of getting a little perspective on what's happening, not be caught in it.
So recently I have been trying to switch a little and do a little more, not, I wouldn't call it concentration practice, I don't think I'm there, but more just calming practice as opposed to more the Andrea style of whatever's arising following that. And it reminded me, because that was helpful, I'm like calming down a little bit, and it reminded me that these different tools are, it kind of depends where you are as to which tool you need to use. Yeah. It was like, oh yeah, that was a better tool for where I am right now.
Great, I think it's fantastic that you see that. And yeah. One of the nice things about doing different meditation practices, like sometimes doing a more mindfulness practice, sometimes more a calming practice, is that you get a little bit of skills, skilled at them. And as you become skilled at them, you can better use them at the right times when they're most needed.
Yeah, figure out which one is which.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, it was reminded hearing I love that analogy of a cat caught on you. That is just, that totally works. it reminded me of your letting the story run out of something that I had forgotten was really useful. This was back when I was in college, that I had to have this really difficult conversation with my mother, and I was like dreading it. And it would just kind of keep going over and over and over and over and over, you know, like practicing it ahead of time. And people would say, oh, well, you shouldn't do that. You know, you just go in there and wing it or whatever. But what I found was eventually, it was in essence, I was practicing it. I hadn't realized that. I finally, like, got that inner confidence to have the conversation, and then it totally dropped away. And then when the conversation came up, it really didn't have to be a conversation because I was, I guess, like my body language was communicating whatever. And so it was a non-issue. But I didn't realize that sometimes the mind doing this is just, I don't know, building up the confidence to deal whatever it needs to deal with. And I thought, well, okay, maybe I'll share that.
Thank you. The idea of confidence is an interesting one in terms of meditation practice. Because one of the functions of meditation practice is to evoke an inner sense of confidence. And the stronger or more engaged the person is in meditation practice, it tends to unleash a certain kind of psychological and physiological forces within us. And one of the unleashed forces is confidence. And to be able to sit and have a reset, not just be calm and soft or something, but to be calm, but also feel a very powerful confidence in this being here in a full, embodied, clear way, create a very different perspective for all kinds of things that we have to do in our life. We can bring that confidence with us. And that the confidence sometimes makes it easier to drop some of our preoccupations. Here in the front.
Along the same lines, I had a difficult encounter with a colleague today. And while I was meditating, I was thinking of different ways to deal with it. And then I just decided to trust future me. And then I didn't have to have the conversation.
Uh-huh. And then what happened? Then those thoughts faded away?
Faded away. It really felt like sort of dry caked mud flaking off.
Mm. Nice. So trusting the future you. What a nice little expression. Yes, please. She has one.
I had a question about something that you had brought up like a week or so ago. But you were mentioning once that you noticed that a lot of thoughts would be associated with like physical sensations, and sometimes by focusing on the sensation, the thought would kind of dissipate. And ever since you said that, I've been experiencing that a lot. Like every time there's a thought, there's kind of like it's usually like some tensing in the face, like your eye or your jaw or something like that. I'm just curious, like, does the thought come first? Or does the sensation come first?
Fantastic. I love it when people ask that question and people start noticing it. It's very good mindfulness to see that. It can work either way. Sometimes the thought comes first and then the sensation in the body. Sometimes there's a sensation arises and then the thought. And you can watch, very fascinating to watch the connection, how one is a condition for the other. So, you know, I sit here and suddenly there's an itch. Or I sit and then I have thoughts that it must be cancer. I sit here and I'm very content and happy and the heater goes on, and then I start having heater thoughts. But then I can have a thought, minding my own business, you know, watching my breath and just quietly content. And then unbidden to me comes up, how 45 years ago, how my high school sweetheart betrayed me. Just thought, the thought floats by. Thought is quite innocent, you know, it's just floating by, it's no charge in the thought, but it just happens to be, thoughts are easy, cheap, but suddenly it comes, I don't know, why did it come, I don't know why it came, and then I'm all hot. My body just starts getting warmer and warmer and tighter, so then you see the thought came first and the body sensation, so it's fascinating to watch both directions.
And have you noticed, patterns between thoughts and the physical manifestation?
A pattern?
Like, for example, I feel like for me, most of the time, it's just, like, most of the physical sensations are not in the body. It's more just, like, a lot in the head. So, like, your neck and things like that, your face. And I haven't found, like, an association between something that's positive and, like, something clenching or whatever. But, like, you feel like there should be a pattern. I don't know if I'm, like, overthinking it, but...
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think for different people, there are different patterns. So some people, their thinking is very much... sometimes certain kinds of thoughts are manifested around the eyes, sometimes in the jaws, sometimes in the chest. Various kinds of thoughts have different places, maybe depending on what emotions they come with, and their intensity, and kind of the drive or the motivation behind them. So rather than, mostly what I want to say is in response to you is, yes, there can be patterns, there can be, and so for you, you're going to have to discover yours. And as you discover yours, you'll become wiser because you'll know where to pay attention and how to be with it. And it's actually quite useful to notice the common patterns. Stress keeps.
Well, I was noticing something tonight. I've been using the concentration practice of counting my breath up to 10 and then going backwards, and I found it really, really helpful. But recently I've been thinking, well, maybe I'm getting a little bit too dependent on that, so what happens if I don't do that? And so tonight was a good example of where I wasn't doing that like I usually do, and some very unpleasant, sticky thoughts that I really didn't want to indulge in at all started emerging. And I said, well, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. And then I was bouncing all over, and I said, okay, back to counting the breath. And then all that distraction just started falling away.
Nice. So that's nice. That's nice. So sometimes the process of taking a shower or a reset, for some people, it can go faster if we do more of a concentration practice than a mindfulness practice. So counting the breath or just really staying with the breath and not allowing yourself to wander away can make a big difference that way. But sometimes what happens is that you can do concentration practice as an avoidance practice and think that the point of practice is only to get calm, only to have a reset. And mindfulness practice, that is part of what can happen. But for really, you know, as the kind of the full advantage of mindfulness practice comes not when we only try to get a result, like get a reset or get calm or avoid the difficulties, but we also then learn how to face the difficulties and sit in the middle of them. And it's possible, I don't know your situation at all, maybe you're doing just the right thing, but I've known people in a similar situation to you where they had a really big need to stop distracting themselves from the distractions. Stop avoiding it by getting calm or getting concentrated. But really, I mean, the fact that certain things keep reappearing, certain thought patterns and concerns, it's really time to take a good look at those. And so part of mindfulness practice can be turned to look directly at them. And so this instructions to go really feel and see what's going on, and then metaphorically sit in the middle of it. And then you get a little bit of a combination of both worlds. To sit quietly in the middle, it's a little bit of a calming concentration practice, but put yourself in the middle of it, then you have the connection to it to start seeing what's going on, to look around. So maybe this can be the last one, please.
I was stuck in some sticky thoughts during this meditation, and was sort of drifting along with them, and then miraculously I came up with a fantasy solution to this problem, and then ironically a set of circumstances that doesn't even exist arose where suddenly there was a problem with my fantasy. And I had to have a good laugh about that internally, because you know, it's just so ridiculous. But also, to your point, it shows that I was putting the problem out there, or the issue out there, rather than putting myself in the driver's seat, so to speak. Uh-huh. And it was all having to do with what other people were saying and doing, rather than what I was experiencing, what my feelings were, right. and my perspective.
You're caught up in the external world. And yeah. Your world began out there, if the way I'm talking makes sense. And so you reset so your world can begin here again. And so it's a much better world. The rest of the world out there, will be a lot better if you can have your world begin here in yourself. Because then we're not reactive to the world or caught in the world. And then, you know, we can be involved in the world in profound ways, in meaningful ways, but not caught in it. So I'll end with a little quote from the Buddha, where he describes someone who lives in the world where their world begins here in themselves. He calls that a wise person. And a person who is wise is someone who's concerned with the welfare of themselves, the welfare of others, the welfare of self and others, and the welfare of the whole world. So to do this movement of turning yourself inside out, to really sitting here and coming back and sitting here and letting the world drop away, your concerns with the world drop away, is not an abandonment of the world, but it's a kind of a preparation to come back in the world without being stuck in it, and being able to be concerned and hopefully contribute to the world. And as we get to the end of 2017, and soon the days are going to get longer again, it's a wonderful thing to spend a little bit of time reflecting and considering having an intention, having a wish, being a wise person who's not just concerned with oneself, not just concerned with others, but concerned with self self and others, others and self, the whole world, kind of in all directions. And I hope very much that this meditation practice that we do here will increase the number of people in the world who are trying to improve it. May the world improve with our kindness and care. Thank you.